Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. From hobbyist recreation to full-on commerce, drones are more and more finding their way into American skies. Business, from small to giant, think Amazon and Jeff Bezos, has big plans for them. Last week, the FAA said not so fast. They've proposed rules for commercial operation, and not everything will fly under those proposed rules, including longer-distance delivery. Now there's a torrent of comment and lobbying going on. We'll hear some of it. This hour, On Point, the future of drones in American skies. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you eager to see more drones up there taking pictures, maybe delivering packages? What is enough restriction? What is too much restriction? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With me first today from New York is Jack Nickus, aviation reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Jack, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So here we are. Pretty simple rules, at least top line, only daylight operation, less than 100 miles an hour, under 55-pound drone, and within sight of the operator, 500 feet or so. What does that mean would be in and what would be out in terms of the kind of commercial operations that might be possible, Jack?
Well, really, these rules would allow for the vast majority of commercial applications that are possible under the technology that is available today. Just to clarify, you know, those things include aerial videography, map making, construction, mining, and also some small-scale farming. And these are a lot of the kind of low-hanging fruit for the drone industry that in many ways and in other countries, companies are already using these devices for these applications today.
Farming would be what? I mean, at 500 feet, it's not going to be a big farm using this. You can't send it out a couple of miles to see where the cattle are. What would it be?
Right, exactly. So for some of these sort of small to medium-sized farms, these drones could be used to monitor your crops and basically collect data for a new technique called precision agriculture. But you're right. The drone industry is saying that, you know, for some of the large-scale farms, the ones that are going to be our big customers, we're really going to have to be able to fly beyond the sight of our operator and be able to really fly on automated routes to collect large-scale data about our operations.
Construction, what would the role be there in a 500-foot radius?
A very fascinating new area for construction. Basically, you know, a lot of these folks haven't been collecting a lot of data on their operations because things move so quickly. But today, and we wrote an article just last week about companies that are already flying these devices kind of in the face of this FAA ban on operations today. But they're using drones to fly over their construction sites every day, create these 3D models, and then they're able to overlay design plans into those 3D models and also kind of track changes of things that have happened to make sure that, you know, the job is going according to plan. So really, you know, many construction workers and executives say that drones are going to be the future of the construction site. They're really going to be the eyes in the sky for contractors.
We've seen something maybe related to that right in our backyard here with the enormous snows in Boston. City officials in Somerville, Massachusetts, just near Boston, used drone-mounted cameras to look at how much snow was piled on top of buildings. Otherwise, you've got to climb up to H1 and look. Here's a news report from WHDH.
Instead of firefighters climbing on countless roofs to see which buildings need snow removal, they're using a drone to get a bird's-eye view, saving money and time.
So we've got a 60-day comment period here. We've heard Amazon saying they're not happy with this. They want to deliver, to be able to deliver products by drone. And if they can't do it in the United States, they'll do it overseas. Is there lobbying that might broaden the scope of what's permitted here before the 60 days is up or before these things become hard and fast rules?
Well, certainly we're going to see a torrent of comments over the next 60 days. I mean, this is one of the most watched rulemakings in recent years for the federal government. And there is a wide range of views about how these things should be regulated. You know, the FAA has said that it's considering rules that would be much even even looser for some of the smallest drones under 4.4 pounds. But really, we're not going to know likely until late 2016 when these rules are expected to be made final.
4.4 pound drone, that would be only camera work, I guess. You can't possibly deliver anything with that.
Okay. For the most part, correct. But for delivery drones, it's important to note, and I'm sure later guests who represent Amazon will speak to this, but the rules proposed actually would in some ways explicitly basically outlaw delivery drones under the current proposed rule regime. They do not cover drones that are carrying what quote-unquote external loads. And also, you know, basically for delivery to be practical with a drone, you really must fly beyond the line of sight of an operator.
So why the restriction on that now? You say there's still technical hurdles there, but why the prohibition or the lack of coverage even of external loads?
Well, you know, the FAA here, I think we should take a step back for a moment. You know, this rule, it comes nearly 4 years behind schedule. So a lot of people are saying that, you know, what's been going on? This is taking way too long. You're stifling the industry. But at the same time, to look at it from the FAA's perspective, this is an extremely complex rule for them to make. Their job is to make sure that the skies are safe. And this is really a historic move in U.S. aviation policy as it paves the way for a significant increase in pilotless aircraft in U.S. skies. And in reality, you know, we're talking about some of the industry proponents who are upset with the rules, but really, the drone industry feared that it would be regulated like manned aircraft, requiring expensive and time-consuming airframe certifications and full pilot licenses for drone operators. But instead, the FAA has said that as long as drone operators pass a written exam and adhere to some of these operational limitations, they're good to fly. And so for you know, a lot of drone advocates, they're actually quite pleasantly surprised here. And the FAA has basically said that they're implementing some of these operational limits, including, you know, the bans on potential drone deliveries, because they don't feel like the technology is there today to mitigate the risk enough to ensure the safety of people in the air and on the ground.
Do they seem to be anticipating a time in which that will happen? I mean, I know there are so many applications, but the thing that keeps grabbing the popular culture, the imagination, whether it's Parks and Recreation, you know, or Jeff Bezos explicitly talking about it, but these, here comes a drone, it puts a package on my front step, off it goes. It's remote control, GPS guided, I guess, and it came from a warehouse, who knows where. Is that on the horizon? We know Amazon wants to think so.
I think absolutely. You know, drone technology has been advancing so rapidly that, you know, drone companies are doing things today that people didn't think they'd be able to do, you know, several years from now. So I think drone delivery is in our future. However, there is a lot of technological hurdles that need to be overcome before that can happen. First and foremost, in many ways, what they call sense and avoid technology. You know, today, U.S. aviation policy is built on a principle of the pilot seeing and avoiding anything in the air. The issue with drone is there's no pilot on board, of course. So you have to build technology to enable the drone in real time to be able to sense any obstacles in front of it and avoid it in real time. But there are already many companies that are working on this and getting very close. Intel demonstrated technology, sense and avoid technology, in January at the Consumer Electronics Show. Mm-hmm. Qualcomm is working on something like this. There are many startups that are working on something like this. You know, the FAA and NASA is working with General Atomics and Honeywell, two very large aerospace firms, to develop something like this. So this is, you know, only a matter of time. And that's what the drone proponents are saying here. By the time these rules are made final in late 2016, we may have the technology in place, but you're going to finalize rules that would prohibit it.
Already in 2013, we heard in the CBS 60 Minutes interview, Jeff Bezos talking with Charlie Rose, Bezos saying, hey, Amazon's getting into delivery, drone delivery.
We're talking about delivery. So there's an item going into the vehicle. I know this looks like science fiction. It's not.
Wow.
This is early. This is still years away. Drops the package.
There's the package.
You come and get your package. And we can do half-hour delivery.
Half-hour delivery.
Half-hour delivery.
And that was 2013. Amazon ready to go. Ready still, they say. Jack Nickus with The Wall Street Journal. Please stand by in New York. With us from Washington right now is Michael Drobak, Executive Director of the Small Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Coalition. Represents companies and projects from Amazon Prime Air to Google X and GoPro. Senior Policy Advisor with the Akin Gump Law Firm. Michael Drobak, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, thanks for having me.
Can I call you? Can we call you a lobbyist for Amazon on these issues?
You can call me a lobbyist for the Small UAV Coalition, which has Amazon as a member.
So what do you make of the proposed rules?
I think we are all excited to see that they actually put a proposed rule out. So that's a good first step. I think, as Jack alluded to, this is going to get a dialogue started, which is positive. I think in terms of the specifics, we were pleased that there was not going to be a requirement for a private pilot's license, because someone who has the ability to operate a Cessna certainly has no necessary skill set in operating a device such as a UAV or a drone, depending on how you want to refer to them. So very pleased. On the front of the visual line of sight and the requirement that, you know, there be no operation of a drone where there are people on the ground that are not involved in the operation, that essentially would do away with any operation. So while you know, I think there are many that are very pleased and think this opens up an opportunity for a great deal of work in the commercial space, I would say that it does not, because they specifically said small unmanned aircraft may not operate over any persons not directly involved in the operation. So, you know, that means you've got to have a sterile environment, and those are almost impossible to create in any context commercially. On the other hand, I'd say I'm very pleased that they did not do anything to harm consumer use. So companies that are and consumers that are currently hobbyists operating drones for their own personal use, using cameras such as the GoPro technology. Mm-hmm. It's thrilling.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the future of drones. Everyday drone use in America, from photography to delivery, sooner or later, people are saying, in the newly proposed drone rules put up by the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. Here's a little promotional video for Amazon Prime Air, sound of a drone arriving at a doorstep, dropping a package, heading back to the warehouse. Oh boy, there's your new sneakers at the door. Or last year here at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, a tech company called Chaotic Moon Studios demonstrated a drone with a taser attached to it, tased one of their employees. Co-founder William Hurley talked about the various possible uses of drones more medical than taser.
You know, imagine that it's not a system to stun on it. Imagine it's a system to deliver an early EMS package. Imagine it's a system to find a lost child using camera vision. There's a ton of things these things can be used for in the commercial space, in the safety space, public safety space, but also in the personal space.
Everybody's got their dream. With KTLA news station television last week, a Colorado woman, rancher, said she needs a drone to make her work easier.
I need one. I'm a rancher in Colorado, and I'm in a very mountainous part near Telluride. And rather than ride up to the top of the hill, I'm going to send one of these to look around for the cows, and then I won't have to go back and forth and back and forth.
Get me a drone to find my cows. FAA says they're on the right path. Here's the FAA Administrator Michael Huerta announcing those new rules last week, proposed rules, on small unmanned aircraft.
Today's proposed rule is a big step forward in outlining the framework that will govern the use of small unmanned aircraft weighing less than 55 pounds. This proposed rule offers a very flexible framework that provides for the safe use of small unmanned aircraft while also accommodating future innovation in the industry.
You can see the range of aspirations, ambitions, hopes and plans out there, and now a scheme for new rules that would that would permit more than there is now to go on, but still not all that some want. Jack Nickas is with us from the Wall Street Journal, aviation reporter there. Michael Drobak is with us from Washington, executive director of the Small Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Coalition. They represent lots of businesses, Amazon, Google, GoPro, and more. You can join us. Do you want drones kept in view of their operators? Do you want the big remote-controlled drone delivery future, the Amazon delivery drone dropping your sneakers at your front door? Is that your worst nightmare? Skies full of buzzing robot drones? Or is that cool, your burrito delivered to you in the park? Michael Drobak, what's your sense of how elastic these proposed rules might be? How far might you get toward, let's say, the Amazon dream, they're not the only ones, but of delivery under this rule regime in the next 60 days?
Yeah, it's a great question, Tom. Thank you. The reality is that these rules were proposed with good intentions. I think the FAA is working hard to do what's right. The problem is that we're seeing operations overseas in France, for example, by companies that are already outside the line of sight doing tremendous work, where Canada is head and shoulders above us. So I think, unfortunately, these rules are not elastic enough to allow us to do what we need to do. But, you know, I think we have imagination and creativity within the industry that's going to move the rules to where they need to be. And it may take an act of Congress, which I think, you know, the description earlier as Michael Drobak, the head of this coalition and lobbyist, part of what lobbying does is we go to lawmakers and explain to them why the industry needs to have a little more freedom. And I think visual line of sight and this concept of having, a sterile environment for operation, it's simply not going to work. And I think the reality is that we're going to see a great deal of energy and excitement by lawmakers. We've already heard it. They are interested in seeing this industry grow. So I think this rule is a good start to the extent that it says there is now something for us to look at and consider. But we've been doing that as we look to our borders to the north, to the south, and across the pond, where there has been unbelievable innovation, and we are certainly far behind what other nations are doing.
But Michael, Jack Nickas is suggesting, if I interpreted him right, we'll go to him, but that even technically we're not really in delivery territory yet in a serious way, that the technical capacity is not yet there.
Well, I think Jack said two things. He said that we're not there, and yet he then said, and again, I got the utmost respect for Jack, but he then said that at CES we saw Intel and others demonstrating that there is technology right here. So I think you don't write rules around technology that inhibit the ability for technology to continue to evolve as it does. In fact, technology always wins, and in this case, it's going to. I think what you do is you entertain what the future holds. And in this industry, we're looking at precision agriculture, aerial photography, digital photography. We're looking at delivery, disaster management, search and rescue, closed set filmmaking. I mean, the FAA itself acknowledged 300 plus markets where there is going to be the use of UAVs at scale to promote efficiencies. And it could be done safely. They said that the benefits far outweigh the risks, that this is $100 million economic positive for the economy. And I simply believe that technology gets there. And the problem we faced with rules like this, proposed rules like this, and laws is that it inhibits technology. And then we find ourselves spending 10 years trying to turn back the laws so that industry can excel. Let's not get ourselves in a position here where we find ourselves looking back saying, wow, France and Canada and Denmark and Germany and the UK and New Zealand and all of these different nations got it right by promoting flexibility. And I think the FAA really tried, so I give them credit. But there are some areas here that are just impossible for us to get beyond. And that's the visual line of sight in the sterile environments.
Talking drones or UAV, unmanned aerial vehicle. Jack Nickas, what about it? These are big players, Amazon, Google, and more. Do you see the power there to sway these rules or to go around the FAA with legislation in Congress that would open the door wider to drone use?
Well, I think certainly Michael is doing his best as a lobbyist, and Google and Amazon have their own in-house folks who are fighting for this, what they call more sensible regulations. And there's, as I said, there's going to be a wave of comments over the next 60 days. So the FAA certainly will have its work cut out for it in sort of sifting through those and seeing what it thinks is the best regulations going forward. But the reality is, technology is advancing very quickly, and it may get to a point where it becomes unavoidable for the FAA. It sees that things are proven and things are safe, such as beyond line of sight with the sense and avoid technology, that the public sentiment gets too much and it has to allow it. But also on legislation, your other point, we've already seen some lawmakers step out in front of this. Senator Chuck Schumer here in New York has said that if the FAA does not change its proposal on, you know, this restriction on beyond line of sight flights, then he would consider legislation. But at the same time, we're also seeing opposing legislation from folks like Senator Dianne Feinstein in California to put more restrictions on recreational use of drones. So really, there may be a battle in Congress if the FAA doesn't move from its current proposal.
Here's Chuck Schumer last month talking about drones.
The purpose here today is to tell all of these agencies, FAA, OMB, Commerce Department, get these rules out and get them out quickly. We need them. Drone users want them. Flyers want them. Average people want them.
Let's hear from our listeners, John in Savannah, Georgia. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yes, thanks for taking the call. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of quick points. I can't help but think with Amazon, certainly, that they got a solution there for a problem that doesn't really exist. I can order stuff. A couple, 3 days later, it's delivered by you know, one of the various couriers.
Already, without drones. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what exactly do we need them for? The second point, which is more concerning, is any kind of technology, especially new technology, has its teething troubles and there will be problems. So the legislation is going to have to catch up with all the problems that are invariably going to come along, and that's, to me, is just very concerning right now.
But, I mean, we've faced that in many industries, in many technologies. They advance, we scramble to keep up. But point taken, I mean, the first question there, why do we really need it? Michael Jack standby. Gregory McNeil joins us right now from Malibu, California, professor of law and public policy at Pepperdine University. Research focuses on security, technology. He's writing a book about aerial robotics and the civilian drone industry. Gregory McNeil, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
What about the economic dynamic of drones? You hear our listener in Savannah saying, look, he can order from Amazon already and it's there in 2 or 3 days. Fact is, it's often faster than that. So who needs a drone?
You know, the funny thing about the listener in Savannah is my response to him would be, have you ever decided that you needed something and made a run out to the store? Because if you have, that's the gap that Amazon's trying to fill there, right? And so we have Amazon, who's investing millions of dollars in developing this technology. They must see some market there, right? It's for a while, people thought that it was just a hoax before Thanksgiving, but you're not hiring people like Michael Drobak, and you're not hiring the top engineers in the country to develop something if you don't think that there's some commercial gain down the road. Jack Nikas talked about some of the possible uses of drones down the road. Even the FAA admitted the economic value of drones by noting, for example, that there are, you know, 100-something people that die every few years inspecting cell phone towers. There are 45,000 bridges a year that can be inspected. We always hear President Obama talking about our failing roads and bridges. With drones, you'd be able to get out and inspect more bridges more quickly, be able to allocate resources more effectively. So there's really a lot of economic potential on the horizon for this type of technology.
Can we talk about drone operators, Gregory? You're focusing on aerial robotics. I mean, how important are operators? Jack's talking about this, what do you call it? Sense and avoid?
Sense
and avoid technology. How advanced is that? If you put in a, you know, my home address and the drone has sense and avoid technology, is there even an operator involved, Gregory McNeil?
So think about our discussions about driverless cars. That's always a fun one to sort of analogize to. A Google driverless car, Google argues, is better than a human driver at avoiding obstacles. If a kid runs out in the street, you might be checking your cell phone or changing the radio station, but the car is always watching, looking in every direction. Take that technology now and miniaturize it and start to put it in these aircraft where they can see in 360 degrees of field at all points in time. And so 2 years ago, we never thought that we would be at the sense and avoid technology point that we're at now. Intel walked out on the stage at CES and demonstrated that it works. There's a company called SkySpecs that in the next few months is going to launch their system that uses lasers to see obstacles and persons and objects around it and can stop and avoid those obstacles. I think 15 years from now, when we're talking about this, we'll be talking about how the robotic technology and the artificial intelligence is better than a manned operator. That's the future that we're looking at. And so it is understandable how Amazon and others would be concerned about the pace of regulations, because it's entirely possible that our technology will advance at a rate that outpaces regulations. And to tack back against that, the only recourse might be to go to Congress and say, it's time for you to force the FAA to allow this type of technology to be used because it's been proven effective. We have to see those scientific tests, though, I think, first.
Pete in New Orleans, Louisiana. Pete, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just wondering if anything's being done to address the considerable noise pollution, especially in the city. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Good question. Gregory, I'll bring that one to you. I mean, people are already driven crazy by all kinds of noise, leaf blowers and you name it. If we've got a sky full of drones, what's the noise factor there? Not to mention just the... Are we going to look up and see, you know how many packages come down streets these days? Just skies full of little buzzing drones, not that little drones.
The visual pollution. What's fascinating about this, and I'm starting to argue about it in some of my academic research, is that at the turn of the century, these were all of the concerns that were raised about manned aircraft. So they're going to be flying over my property. Someone in a balloon will be looking down at me in my backyard. Think of the noise associated with it. And what the U.S. Supreme Court did in a case back in the 40s, the Cosby case it was called, basically said that landowners own as much of the space above the ground as they can occupy or use in connection with their land, and that includes some of the airspace. And when flights or other types of things over the property are so low and so frequent as to be a direct and immediate interference with your enjoyment and use of the land, then you might be able to pursue someone for nuisance or for trespass, or now we're starting to see it sort of invasion of privacy issues. And so, you know, I think this person is correct in that there might be the noise associated with the drones flying around. However, I think what the person and what many commentators fail to recognize is that Amazon drones on their way to a delivery will be operating somewhere between 300 and 500 feet in the air. So that's like 10 times the height of the average two-story home. It's actually really pretty high. And the noise from it at that altitude would be quieter than the noise you would see from the UPS truck driving down your street. The place where it might be problematic is if the aircraft has to land. But if you look at what Google is prototyping, Google doesn't ever anticipate that the aircraft would land. Instead, it would lower the package down on a tether. And so I think that the key point to recognize is that the innovators are thinking about these challenges and trying to rapidly not only meet our needs through innovation, but also meet the concerns. And so where Michael Drobak says that technology always wins, I think that technology always wins because smart people are behind the technology trying to be responsive to it. It'll be interesting, though, whether not only at the federal level, whether at the state and local level, we allow the laws to develop in a way that protects the sort of interests that the caller articulated while also allowing innovation to move forward. And we've seen an odd mixture where somehow now the federal government almost seems more respective of innovation than some state and local lawmakers have been.
Jack Nickus, jump in here. I mean, UPS trucks, sure, they're out there, but they've got hundreds of packages with a drone, presumably of this size. It'd probably be one package by one drone. You know, if you imagine a swarm of these over a neighborhood, for me, that could be a showstopper in a hurry. What about the noise factor, Jack?
I think it's a good question, and I think we're still a little bit ahead of ourselves in terms of worrying about that. I think for the near future, the next several years, it's really going to be a case-by-case scenario in terms of seeing these drones. I don't think we're going to have a swarm of them above our cities.
When the number of UPS trucks coming down my street, if those were, and they've
fair
got
point.
Lots of, yeah, okay.
Fair point. I think one thing to say about this is that one of the proposals, you know, early on about forecasting how these devices will be integrated into U.S. skies is the idea of urban skyways, in which there are certain tracks of the air that are set for drone use, certain altitudes, certain parts of the airspace where maybe things will be considered. Obviously, they want to avoid obstacles. They want to avoid airports and manned aircraft traffic. But I think, you know, part of that may also be choosing a route that would limit, noise over over cities and in suburbs.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the future of drones in America. The Federal Aviation Administration out with proposed rules. We're in the 60-day comment period now. Line of sight use, 500 feet use, and more there. People are happy to see new regulations coming. The technology is developing. On the other hand, some say, whoa, we don't want skies full of drones. Others, big interest in getting a whole lot of drones up there. And in a hurry, Jack Nickus covers it all for the Wall Street Journal, aviation reporter there. He joins us from New York. Michael Drobak represents a number of companies who would like more latitude for, among other things, just over the horizon, delivery here. His Small Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Coalition represents Amazon, Google, GoPro, and more. Gregory McNeil is writing a book about aerial robotics in the civilian drone industry. He joins us from Pepperdine University in Malibu, California. It's in the popular imagination. It's all over the trade shows, but also right out just TV. Here's Parks and Recreation. Set in the year 2017, Leslie, played by Amy Poehler, Ben, played by Adam Scott, startled to find a delivery drone on their doorstep.
Whoa, open your door? Ah! Oh, my God, Ben, we're about to die!
Good Lord.
Oh, my. The robots have come for us. I made fun of you when you said it would happen, but your novel has come true.
Parks and Recreation having some fun, but just last month, well, there's a drone on the White House lawn. Here's an ABC News report.
Another security breach at the White House. Overnight, a drone found on the White House North Lawn, recovered by the Secret Service. While ABC News has confirmed the drone belonged to a government employee who says he lost control of that device.
Whoops, not so good. Jack, Michael, Gregory, lots of response from our listeners here. Joni says, if Amazon delivers stuff by drone to me, I expect to see a lot of stuff stuck in trees. My kid has a drone, so I know. Jim says, regulate drones. I'm ordering a pellet gun from Jeff Bezos. Neil says, we need to err on the side of the interests and rights of citizens. And Bettina writes, shouldn't Homeland Security be involved? Who monitors a drone's payload? Otherwise, bring on the burrito. Gene in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Gene, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
All right, what do you think, Gene?
Well, we've got a legislator here that's trying to pass a bill that's going to make it legal to shoot drones out of the sky if they cross your property line.
Okay, how do you feel about that? Are you oiling the shotgun?
Man, I would shoot one. I ain't gonna lie. There's a lot of people in Oklahoma that love guns. You know, there's a lot of people that raise cattle up here, and that's what they say it's for, is to curb the cattle thieving or whatever, but I don't know. What do you think?
Let's take it to Michael Drobak. Michael, you know, Americans love their guns. There are a lot of them out there, and people love for sport will shoot at just about anything. What about your Small Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Coalition? How do you see the future intersection of small unmanned aerial vehicles and the how many million, 100 millions of guns in America?
So this is quite a question. So I would say this. You know, there are companies like 3D Robotics, DJI, and Parrot that are where we have over 500,000 consumer drones in the skies, and people are enjoying them. The idea that we are going to allow people to shoot these out of the sky is, it's unnecessary, of course. And, I'm going to take it a step further to say that we need to entertain a world in which we have full automation. The whole concept of unmanned aerial vehicles is that they are, in fact, unmanned. So this idea of visual line of sight by a person's eye doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And this concept of, you know, why do we need this because we can still get deliveries in 3 days? Or why do we need this because we still have first responders that are able to address fires? Well, sometimes we don't know what we need until we don't know how we lived without it. And to go to the far extreme to shooting things out of skies, well, I live under the flight path of National Airport. And I can't tell you how many times I've been awakened by airplanes taking off and landing. Look, you live with these things. My neighbor gets up at 6 a.m. and mows his lawn. Is that frustrating to me? You bet it is. But let's not get crazy here in terms of how we're looking at what we're going to be allowing the vigilantes in our midst to go out and do. This is new technology. People sometimes react to technologies in ways where they're fearful of it, and that makes sense. But then one day, those same people that are dialing in to say we don't need this are going to be dialing in to say, I just got my pizza delivered to me at my house, or I just got the diapers delivered to me at my house in 30 minutes, and I'm thrilled.
Or my neighbor shut my pizza down. Jack, I feel like we're time traveling a little bit. Right now, these FAA regulations have what Michael calls a sterile environment under the drone. Is that right? Really, there can't be anyone under it? How would that work on a construction site, Jack?
I want to address the shooting of down real quick before I get to that question. In that federal law today, and the FAA has made this clear, federal law considers these drones as aircraft. And thus, if you shoot one down, at that point, you're running afoul of very strong laws on messing with aircraft in federal skies, regardless of any state laws. So any citizen who does do that would probably face significant penalties. So on your point regarding flying over people, I think this is one of the sort of looked over proposals here that could have a very big impact on commercial drone applications going forward. The FAA has effectively said that any drone flight over a person not involved in the flight of the aircraft, so maybe the drone operator, is not allowed. So therefore, you can't fly over anyone else. That obviously is a really, really stringent restriction. And the sense is that in practical enforcement, the FAA couldn't possibly really enforce this kind of thing. However, just by outlawing it, it obviously would put a damper on many commercial applications. So this is probably going to be one of the most discussed proposals in the 60-day comment period. But as you said, it is a good question. How would these rules apply for something like a construction site? Already, this is happening. This is a construction site is a closed off area where people are wearing hard hats, etc. Mm-hmm. You would imagine that this is one of the areas that you would be okay with the drone flying overhead.
Gregory McNeil, sounds like there's still some debate over delivery. We'll see how that unfolds. Let's say we don't get all the way to delivery in this first round of rules. What do you expect to be the first wave of significant applications of drone use, commercial?
You highlighted one of them earlier, which is the small company in Somerville that went to their state and local government and said, hey, we can inspect these buildings for the amount of snow that's on the rooftop. Now, I'm not saying snow inspection is the future, but inspection is one of the things that will quickly come about. And so the idea is anywhere that you would need to put a camera or a sensor. And so think of any utility worker who drives by with a ladder and you're thinking maybe you've got a strip mall. They're trying to figure out why the air conditioning bill is so expensive. Usually what will happen is that an inspector will drive out, go up onto the rooftop with a ladder, mm-hmm. and inspect the building to try and find leaks. That type of thing that would take 2 hours before can now be done in 25 minutes with the drone, inspecting towers, all of the aerial videography, so realtors. That first set of things where I need to get the eye to a better vantage point, all are going to be possible now. And so I think we're going to see thousands of uses as people begin to figure these things out, with the limitation, of course, that Jack noted of not being able to fly over people. But it's not but there is a little bit of wiggle room there, which is that unprotected persons. So persons in cars wouldn't be an issue. A person in a tractor wouldn't be an issue so long as they could be protected from being injured by the aircraft if the aircraft were to crash on them.
What's the flight range distance-wise and weight range of the current drone technology, Gregory? What's that like?
It's actually really far. So if you picked up the if you were to go on Amazon and order a DJI Phantom, the most popular consumer drone, you could take it up thousands of feet in the sky. The software will limit how far up you can go, but you could turn that limitation off, and so it could go pretty far, almost to the point where it is beyond your line of sight. And so it's not the transmission capability exists to take it very far. There are hobbyists now who wear goggles known as first-person view FPV goggles, where they can see through the eyes of the drone and they can fly the aircraft kilometers away using the correct antenna. And so, in fact, one of the most famous cases about this was the Perker case that the FAA brought against a drone pilot. And this pilot is so good at sitting down in a field with a pair of goggles, flying the aircraft miles away, that he could fly weaving in and out of sort of mountain ranges. And he's flown under bridges outside of New York City, flown around the Statue of Liberty, all from miles away without seeing directly the aircraft, but instead seeing through the eyes of the aircraft through these goggles. And so the technology is already there to fly really far away. It's just the limitation that's been placed by laws.
Let's go to Boulder, Colorado, and Jay. Jay, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I had a quick question, and it regards the safety of individuals that aren't involved in, let's say, a delivery. You know, a lot of people are talking about the convenience of getting a burrito in 30 minutes, or diapers, as was mentioned. But what about if these things are out of the line of sight of the operator, and let's say there's some sort of electrical interference from a power line, or, you know, there's just some mechanical failure with the drone itself, and it should crash into traffic or a crowd of people. You know, these are safety concerns that are not being addressed. And it was said that, I believe he said, we don't know what we can't live without until we don't have it, or until we have it, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And that's an irresponsible way to go about it.
Jay, let us pick it straight up. Gregory, what about it? Liability, but even before liability, just avoidance of danger. How strong is the technology on that? How important will rules be for ensuring that safety?
Right. I think this is why the FAA has not allowed beyond visual line of sight. So they want the operator to be able to see the aircraft and be able to try and recover from a mistake that might be made. They want that capability in the hands of the operator, and so they don't want the drone getting too far from the operator. Of course, if the drone were to fall out of the sky and you're flying it for commercial purposes, anyone injured or any property damaged, the operator would be subject to a lawsuit. So there's an entire industry, insurance industry now, that will be required. And basically, if you're going to fly commercially, you're going to need to have insurance. You're going to need to be covered. Of course, that doesn't prevent the injury to the person on the ground, but nothing in life prevents injuries.
What about this sense and avoid technology Jack Nickas is talking about from the Wall Street Journal? Where are we on that?
So sense and avoid technology, as I mentioned earlier, we're only a few months away from a few companies demonstrating effective sense and avoid technology. And so that possibility is there. Of course, it doesn't prevent what happens if an aircraft fails, just like what happens if the brakes on your moped fail and somebody gets injured. It's the same concept, right? And so we have existing tort law that can address the type of liability that occurs when individuals are injured. And so I understand the person's concern with sort of the fear of new technology, but it's not that there's not a series of lawsuits and a legal remedy system that exists to ensure that someone's made whole if they are, in fact, injured.
San Antonio, Texas. Michael is calling. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Well, I spend a lot of my time every month in Mexico, and they delivering products to homes, they kind of use human drones, so to speak.
What do you mean?
Well, the guys on 125cc motorcycles that you can call a pharmacy, and they'll bring your medicines directly to you. You can call a pizza, of course, just like here, but it costs 10 pesos to get a pizza delivered to your home, or even McDonald's will deliver straight to your home.
So what do you think of drones for that, Michael?
I think drones are fantastic for it because what you find out is your life gets a lot simpler as people's hectic lives go about their everyday living, et cetera, that when you can have your medicines delivered straight to you or your other packages delivered straight to your doorstep, it gives you more time to spend with your family. And that's kind of what Mexico's done. They focus on family time, you know, so people have time to spend with each other instead of worrying about running errands.
Let the motorcycle bring exactly what you want, exactly when you need it. Maybe in the USA it'll be a drone. Michael, I appreciate your call. Let me get Lee. Oh, whoops. I just lost a... Well, that's fine.
Hey, Tom.
Yes, please.
This is Michael. I want to say one thing about the caller that was concerned about the safety harms and the safety risks on delivery. I would say that one of the things that we've seen with the FAA is that the UAS test sites, there are six in the country, have not been used effectively. Most companies are not able to test outdoors. And therefore, the idea that these companies are going to operate in circumstances where it's unsafe is just patently untrue.
Anything can be unsafe. We know that your back steps can be unsafe.
Of course, so. But certainly testing helps. And I want to say, that, you know, most of these companies have been asking the FAA for quite some time through the Section 333 exemption process to be allowed to test near their facilities. Mm-hmm. And I'm thrilled that, you know, we are seeing conferences all over the country, all over the world on drones. And I'll be attending, you know, one in Santa Cruz, California, that Philip McNamara is sponsoring, that's going to be looking at this issue of big data. And there'll be, you know, dinners at Riva and Splash on the wharf. And we're going to be talking about these issues of testing. And we're going to be talking about these issues of, you know, how do we do this safely? And companies that have insurance that are looking to test, they will not operate until they can do it safely. And that's the key piece that people need to understand. In France, they're already operating outside the line of sight. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves the question: does the French government care about its citizens less than the United States? I don't think so.
Jack, what about the U.S.? Where we are on this? The suggestion from Michael is that the U.S. adoption rate is behind that of other countries. We're going to lose the drone race. What do you say, Jack?
Well, this is certainly one of the arguments that's been made for a while, and I think it is a reasonable one because the U.S. laws have certainly been behind other countries. For example, right now there are 20-some-odd approved commercial operators here in the U.S. under the current FAA policy. In Europe, there are thousands. So in terms of approved uses, yes, there are far more in Europe. And what's happened here in the U.S., a lot of commercial operators have gone underground and are flying them anyways. But finally, I just want to finish with, mm-hmm. you know, in defense of the FAA, the U.S. is very complex skies with a lot of general aviation aircraft flying low to the ground. And the FAA has really said it's trying to be as careful as possible to ensure the safety of everyone in the U.S., in the air and on the ground.
Well, watch this space, this airspace, I guess, as the whole drone industry continues to rise up. Rules out there now, proposed 60-day comment period. We are in it with the FAA. If you've got a thought, give it to them. Jack Nickus with The Wall Street Journal. Great to have you with us, Jack. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Michael Drobak at the Small Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Coalition, speaking up for Amazon and Google and GoPro and a lot more. Thank you, Michael.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
And Gregory McNeil at Pepperdine University. Thanks for joining us, Gregory.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.